As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode... What, no midweek game to look back on? It's true. Chelsea have a date at the Palace on Saturday. We've got just the man to profile the Oppo. We check in with the Lone Army, and there's the latest instalment of our much-vaunted quiz, available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. How you doing then, listener? Still on top of the world? Good. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, back in your lugs alongside two of The Athletic's finest. Simon Johnson back from Abu Dhabi and looking resplendent and tanned.
I saw the sun from the back of a taxi. That's what you mean. Although I did get sunburn on the top of my head. And those of you that know my glorious disposition... Actually, you probably think I need a bit of tan up there, given I haven't got any hair. But it was during the course of listening to Petr Cech talk for 45 minutes. So it was worth it, as far as I was concerned.
Lots of great content. It sounds like you had fun out there and obviously got the right result in the end.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, I have to say, for a number of reasons. Once all the COVID... It's a bit of fun and games with the COVID testing over there, which is an added stress. I loved being at the final. I loved being in mix zones again. It's the first time I've been in a mix zone for 2 years. If anyone's listening doesn't know what I'm talking about, that's where, as a journalist, you can actually talk to players post-match. And it's not even just talking to players. You get to sort of see behind the scenes people, what they're doing, interacting, etc. Sort of brief flash of owner Roman Abramovich walking through as if he hadn't just won the FIFA Club World Cup, to be honest with you. I think he was more focused on getting out of the stadium without being hassled by one of us. And one of the highlights of, I wouldn't say my year because the year's only just started, but I really enjoyed covering a local UAE Pro League game, which is a piece I wrote about. It was great fun actually meeting the genuine locals, not sort of just some Westerners and expats and stuff. That was great fun and something I'll always remember.
All that content is available up on The Athletic now. Dominic Fifield's also with us, like me, showing the pale and pasty features of a man trapped on this cursed isle we laughably call Great Britain. How you doing, Dom? Looking forward to
yes,
Saturday's
we
game?
Obviously, we obviously need a trip to the Emirates just to boost our skin colour. Am I looking? No, I hate this fixture. This is the worst fixture of the year for me. I absolutely loathe it. I can't stand it. It's a... It rarely produces anything that makes me smile.
Well, that's a nice tee up for our first topic today. We're going to talk about Saturday's London derby. Crystal Palace versus Chelsea then. It goes down at 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday at Selhurst Park. The Eagles 13th in the table after a goalless draw at Brentford last time out. Chelsea still third despite not playing last weekend. Simon, we're talking pre-Thomas Tuchel's pre-match presser, but we know that Mason Mount's going to be out, right? Might we see a return of Reece James here?
Well, the last time you asked me that question, I said he was going to be out in the FIFA Club World Cup, which eventually he was on, but just as a spectator and to be feel part of it. I'd be surprised if he starts or anything like that. We might see him on the bench simply because he's gone so long without playing and they won't want to just rush him straight back. But yeah, Mason Mount, not unsurprisingly, because I... the TV cameras picked up that his right ankle was heavily strapped. I saw him leave the stadium on Saturday on crutches, and I asked him, you know, sort of how bad is it, and he didn't give a very positive reply. So, if he's only out for a couple of weeks, though, I think that's still a bonus under the circumstances. Although for him, that will be a blow because it's probable that he won't be in the League Cup final either. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who wasn't, I think he was one of the only, must have been the only player that didn't make the trip. He's back in training after an Achilles, sort of minor Achilles issue. So he might be available again. But Chelsea pretty much full strength virtually full strength otherwise.
Dom, it worked out quite well for Chelsea. Obviously, they won the Club World Cup. They got a bit of sun on their backs. But in terms of the other teams around them, and I'm talking below rather than above, nobody picked up a win last weekend, did they? Spurs got beaten. Arsenal didn't play. Well, Manchester United won midweek, but West Ham dropped points at Leicester too. So it's not as if people have caught up massive ground on them in the race for the top four, and they're still looking pretty well placed for that.
Absolutely right. It's funny that we're now talking along those lines. I mean, there was a spell where we obviously were looking higher with Chelsea, and you know, Manchester City continue to win games, and they're sort of into the middle distance now, away from Thomas Tuchel's team. And you could argue that Liverpool are also breaking free slightly, but so if that means that almost the motivation has switched just to securing that top four place. Yeah, they didn't lose ground. I mean, that draw with Brighton was effectively one of the games that they were going to play. The other one was Arsenal, which will be a big opportunity for Chelsea to open up space again between them and one of the chasing pack. But they haven't lost out. I would have thought they would have benefited really from everything they've done over the last 3 or 4 weeks with the winter break, which was a chance for them to catch their breath. The FA Cup tie was okay. It was a bit of a slug to get that win against Plymouth, but they got through it, and they gave people some game time to get back into the swing of things. And then two matches over in Abu Dhabi just to keep people fresh, to get Romelu Lukaku scoring again. There are lots of positives. And, you know, this week now is probably the first time that Thomas Tuchel has had a full week without a game to work with his entire squad since probably early November. So, I mean, if you're a Crystal Palace supporter, this is dreadful timing because, quite frankly, he'll get the tactics right and he'll work on things this week. So, there you go.
Yeah, just a quick add, you know, to sort of feed in some Abu Dhabi kind of sentiment was that one of the things I can reveal that Petr Cech was talking about was that he said it felt like pre-season, like a pre-season camp. And he was talking about it in a positive fashion. He was saying compared to the Club World Cup in 2012, he said it was a real miserable experience for most of the squad. In fact, it kind of explained why they played the way they did out there, that the vast majority weren't enjoying it, didn't want to be there, couldn't wait to get home sort of thing. Whereas this was the complete opposite. It's, you know, in Tokyo, it was winter, a bit miserable. Abu Dhabi, 25 degrees. They get to be by the pool when they're not training. Glorious training ground right next to this magnificent mosque, which if you've seen the Twitter pictures or the pictures that Chelsea put out, made, you know, really amazing. I think it's the third biggest in the world. It's a stunning location. And they clearly loved it out there. And I think since they've been back, they've all gone out for dinner as a squad to celebrate the Club World Cup win. And you really got a sense of it's reinstilled belief, enthusiasm. It's given them a kickstart. This could all backfire horrifically on Saturday, of course. But you really got a sense that this was a really positive trip for them. In so many ways, people still talk about the football they played, etc. But I think the result was was the most important thing. They've come back with the trophy. And just like the Super Cup win, which preceded a Crystal Palace victory, Chelsea will hope that lightning strikes twice.
In fact, that contrast with 2012 is worth labouring the point a bit. I mean, you have to bear in mind that Chelsea were in a right mess when they went to Tokyo. They'd lost Roberto Di Matteo. Rafa Benitez had come in and nobody, certainly the supporters, didn't seem to want him.
Simon
didn't want him, clearly. There was open mutiny in the stands at some of those games. I mean, the City and the Fulham games at the beginning of his tenure were miserable occasions. And, of course, they'd already been eliminated from the Champions League. So they were facing a sort of December time, going into the new year with Europa League football to look forward to. And clearly no title challenge either. So although they were competing in domestic cup competitions as well, it was a low point. And, you know, the defeat they suffered to Corinthians in the final when they failed to deal with a Brazilian low block rather sort of set the tone, or rather maintain the tone, let's say. Whereas now you've got Thomas Tuchel, whose team found a way to get past similarly stubborn Brazilian opponents. And they go back into a domestic campaign where they've still got plenty to look forward to, a League Cup final, a continued FA Cup run, Champions League defence starting again against Lille next week, and just lots going on. I can see why it would be an upturn, and I can see why there would be a real spring in their step and then some optimism as to what's to follow.
Spring in their step maybe as well, Simon, of Romelu Lukaku. It's going to be fascinating to see whether, you know, the Club World Cup was an aberration or if this is the kickstart that we've been waiting for him.
Yeah, and I spoke to Didier Drogba about it. It was great to see him. He was there at the final, and I thought, who better to talk to about Romelu Lukaku than the guy that went through a very similar thing? You know, people forget that in the first couple of years, he wasn't playing particularly great by his very, very high standards. He was making fairly regular sort of comments about wanting to leave. The fans didn't particularly like him mainly because of his sort of play acting and sort of was accused of diving, etc. So, yeah, and they have a very special bond, the two of them. And Didier thinks that, well, he was actually sticking up for Romelu. He thinks he's doing pretty well. But he did acknowledge that this could be a crucial goal for him. It could be a turning point. And he's referring to the goal in the final. I mean, the semi-final, the body language I found quite interesting when he scored. He didn't look particularly happy. He wasn't sort of celebrating and sort of, I've scored, my drought's over, because his only other goal since the interview was against Chesterfield. But that headed goal was, that's what he was signed for. I thought it was an absolute class header. And I think that did sort of strike a chord more with him. I think that got him going. So, yeah, if out of the Club World Cup, an added bonus is Lukaku sort of recovered some of his confidence, it's another sort of thing that they'll reflect back on perhaps at the end of the season as a great trip for another reason.
Let's talk Palace then, Dom. What's the beef at the moment? Seems like everybody's been quick to praise Vieira ball, but I know you're yet to win a league game this year.
Yeah, we've only won two in 13, I think it is, 11 points from the last 13 matches. It's born of a few things. It's definitely a season of transition, massive, massive change in style from the very pragmatic low block of a Roy Hodgson solid setup to something more expansive under Patrick Vieira. I mean, Chelsea's game against Palace at Stamford Bridge on the opening day of the season was completely unreflective of how Palace have been playing since. However, after a very promising sort of autumn, they lost a couple of players to injury, which disrupted things in midfield. I think a few of the players have gone slightly off the boil, only slightly, but again, it's been a contributing factor in terms of the absentees of experienced players like Chick Kouyaté at AFCON and James McArthur with a ripped hamstring. I expect that when those guys come back in, and they probably will come back in on Saturday, that in time they will get back into solid mid-table, and the next phase of the team's development will be kickstarted. But at the moment, it's a bit... It's funny because people look at it and people assume that Palace have had a really good season. They've actually got fewer points than they had at this stage last season under Roy Hodgson. And I think some of the decisions that are being made in terms of selection and in-game substitutions are questionable, because we've got a management staff that's learning on the hoof as well at this level. They're inexperienced. It's completely understandable. And new players, all of those players who came in the summer are trying to find their feet and at this level and establish themselves at this level. They won 5 games all season, which isn't a great tally. They haven't lost many, but it's very much a let's get through the season, see how far they can get into mid-table, and then kick on again in the summer with the next wave of recruitment. And I mean, I should make the point that of those guys, there's a Chelsea contingent there. I mean, Conor Gallagher has had some excellent moments, was very, very good up to what we think was a COVID test around the Christmas time, which has affected him. He's not been quite the same in recent weeks. Palace never confirmed COVID cases, but the suggestion is that he did actually have a dose of the virus. And he's still a goal threat. He's still very, very good and industrious in that midfield. But the one that's really caught my eye this year has been Mark Gaye, who's been superb. People will focus on the occasional errors that he's made in the box, usually with handballs. I mean, not least at Brentford last week, where he was spared by a slight push in the back from conceding another penalty. But those errors stand out because they're not many of them. His standards have been absolutely outstanding for a first year of prolonged Premier League football, and he looks like a natural leader of men. He'll be a future captain of that team. And in terms of his development, he feels like almost the next centre back on the waiting to get into that England setup, because he's been class.
Don, just a quick question. You're talking about the record is worse than Roy Hodgson at this time last year, but is there a sense among Palace fans, etc., that they're enjoying the football though a lot more? That you know, despite the sort of disappointing run recently, that there is a general sort of sense of, yeah, but at least sort of like we're being entertained every week.
Absolutely. And if you have the audacity to point out some of the deficiencies of the management staff and the decisions that are being made, then you're lambasted, probably quite rightly, by the supporter base, because they've enjoyed the changes that have been instigated, the attacking side of the game. I mean, Palace, I went to the Norwich game last week. Palace had 72% of the ball. They had marginally more of the ball that day than Manchester City did when they went to Carrow Road on Saturday. Okay, they didn't create City's 21 chances, but you know, Palace don't do that in the top flight. They haven't done it across any of their... This would be the 9th year in this stint in the top division. They don't dominate possession like that. I don't expect them to do that against Chelsea at the weekend, but look at the personnel that Patrick Vieira has got to choose from in forward areas now. I mean, Michael Olise's been absolutely outstanding, taking his first steps at this level again. So there will be an inconsistency there, but he's another ex-Chelsea youth team player. The connections go on. He's been brilliant. Wilfred Zaha's back now from AFCON and scored an absolute belter at Carrow Road. You've got 3 strikers competing for one place in Edouard, Mateta and Benteke, and you could put any of them in. They're all interchangeable, really. They offer slightly different strengths and weaknesses, but you know, I mean, I was looking at Benteke's record against Chelsea. I mean, you'd pick him against them every day of the week, but he probably won't. It probably will be a Mateta. There's a lot to like about this setup, and the progressive nature of the football they're playing or attempting to play. It's just that striking that balance between being expansive, being forward thinking, and actually having that bit of streetwise nous to get you the results, which is what the previous Palace team, okay, they didn't do it against Chelsea, but they did it against enough teams in the Premier League to survive every year very comfortably. And that's maybe what they're lacking a bit of, that bit of ruthlessness, that slightly bit of that canniness to know you know, when to how to manage a game, let's put it like that. And I suspect that, you know, when they come up against streetwise teams, they tend to suffer, and Chelsea may well be that on Saturday. But generally speaking, the whole club and the team is moving in the right direction.
Yeah, they certainly haven't got a great recent record against Chelsea, by which I mean they've lost the last eight home and away, have Palace. So we'll see if that record continues on Saturday. We will, of course, react to that game in Monday's show. Next, though, we're going to check in with the Lone Army.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Right, ridiculously, listener, I title this section in the script Only the Lonely, which means I've had Only the Lonely by Elvis Presley stuck in my head for the last 48 hours. But that's on me, though, so we'll move on swiftly. Conor Gallagher's not going to be involved. We mentioned him already on Saturday. Can't play against his parent club. Dom, you mentioned briefly there that maybe he's gone off the board a little bit, you know, because of reasons totally out of his control. Do you think Palace will go in for another loan for him next season, if presuming that Chelsea don't want to sell him? Might that be an option?
I think that Palace and Chelsea, well, Palace will certainly be in dialogue with Chelsea pretty regularly over the summer months to find out what their plans are for Conor Gallagher, and if there is any hint, any chance that he might be available either permanently or on loan. And I doubt there will be, but if there is any chance, they will attempt to be right at the front of the queue to bring him back, because he has, for a long period, he personified the type of energy and industry that Patrick Vieira wanted in this team. He was the main man. And when I say he's had a dip, he's only had a dip because his standards were so high before Christmas. I mean, the goal that he scored this year at Brighton was an unbelievable move. I've never seen the likes of which someone by a Palace team ever. It involved touches from every single member of the Palace team. 20 passes before he converted with a really, really smart finish, by the way, at the end of it all. And that sums him up. He's got that Lampard-esque ability to be in the box at the right time, to time that run and to time the shot with a real accuracy and a pace and an aggression. And I think he'll be at Chelsea next year, and he'll make his mark at Chelsea. But if there's any doubt over that, then Palace will be pushing heaven and earth to try and get him back.
Somebody else who might be at Chelsea, I guess, next season, Simon, is Armando Breuer, which is what producer Lucy's Albanian friend told us we should be calling him.
Breuer.
Maybe the biggest success, actually, over the course of the whole season. Got his eighth goal of the campaign against Spurs earlier this month. Southampton seemed pretty intent on making him a full-time saint. Is that still their stance? And what are Chelsea thinking about it? Probably looking at the likes of Werner and Pulisic, who've underwhelmed, and thought, well, maybe this guy can fill one of their places.
Yeah, and Southampton aren't the only ones. It seems like a different club every day is being linked with Breuer. And understandably so. He's one of the best young strikers in Europe. I think last season on loan at Vitesse, he'd scored the most goals for his age range in the top five leagues in Europe. He has taken his game. His progress is remarkable, because I saw him in an under-23s game just before lockdown, so a couple of years ago. I was actually there to watch Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who's obviously on the combat trail. And I remember looking at Breuer going, yeah, he's all right, you know, he's all right. Certainly got something. But in 2 years, my word, is he coming on leaps and bounds. He's just, his confidence levels, his speed, the way he's, I mean, Harry Maguire's been made to look foolish a number of times this season. But he, in many ways. But he absolutely made a mockery of Harry Maguire in the game against United. Chelsea, I mean, in my opinion, Chelsea should do everything they can to persuade this guy to stay. They did brilliantly to get him to sign that 5-year contract. But what concerns me is that if you look at saleable assets Chelsea have and the easiest deals to do, they will be for Broya and Conor Gallagher, not for Christian Pulisic and Timo Werner. Because these are the hot guys. These are the guys that clubs want, not the guys that are struggling to perform and are on massive wages. They want the up-and-coming stars. So I think there will be a concern, certainly among the Chelsea fan base, that Chelsea might cash in again like they did last summer, including a buyback clause to slightly, you know, dilute the angst. Because if you're Broya, you'll be thinking, I could start for most teams in the league and possibly a lot of teams in Europe. Why do I want to play second fiddle to Lukaku and Kai Havertz? Which is what would happen even if Pulisic and Werner go. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. And Chelsea were doing, I'm sure they were doing their utmost to persuade him to stick around, because if it was me, he'd be in the squad on a regular basis next season and used a lot.
I have to say that he's, the thing that really blew me away about Broha was the presence he had on the pitch.
Yeah.
Again, an aggression to his game. He was bullying defenders in the air, quicker than I'd anticipated on across the turf as well. But he looked like a player that felt he was a Chelsea player wearing a Southampton shirt. I'm better than this. And like, he had that attitude about him, he looks a real talent, and I can completely agree with Si in terms of how difficult it will be for Chelsea to shift some of the deadwood. And we say it every time, as we approach every transfer window, we just, you know, yes, they got to shift all those players that are, well, they're on massive money. It's near impossible to shift them in a way that is efficient and that Chelsea would find acceptable, as I think we're going to come on to with some of the other loans that are out there who are players in their late 20s and clearly don't have long-term futures at Chelsea. But people like Broha and Gallagher should have futures at Chelsea. They should be in the team in the years ahead. But they may well be suffering because of some of the decisions made in the transfer market in the last few years.
The other thing about Broha that's remarkable is that he actually started the season with Hasan Hüttl basically saying, I don't know why they signed this guy. and sort of questioning, you know, his attitude a little bit, that perhaps he did walk in going, I'm the Chelsea man, I'm better than everybody, blah, 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 which perhaps he wasn't training that well, apparently. But again, credit to him, because, you know, that was a loan that could have been going drastically wrong, but he's turned it around remarkably to sort of being out the side and playing the odd League Cup game in the early rounds to now being a vital member of that side. Shows a lot for his character.
And loans going drastically wrong links me nicely into our next player, Billy Gilmore. Dom, how big of a setback has this season been for him? He's been in the team more under Dean Smith, but he's still playing for a rubbish team and for a fan base who don't appreciate him. Is it character building or is it damaging?
I think we have to be a bit careful on the fan base not appreciating him. I mean, there was, weirdly, actually, I'll use the two examples when I saw him in the flesh at Palace Norwich games. And the first one at Selhurst Park in December, where the supporters did turn on him. And they singled him out as a Chelsea player that was there for the short term, that they were developing a player for another club and he wasn't doing the business as far as they were concerned. And they expected an awful lot more. And they made their frustrations, I think their frustrations at the entire team and club at that time, they sort of centred them upon the young loanee, unfairly, but, you know, that was just the sense of a club that was deeply, deeply frustrated and disillusioned with the way the season was going. Now, they have had an upturn of results of late. I don't think they're quite as hopeless as they might have appeared, say, a month or 6 weeks back. I still think they're going to go down, and Newcastle's revival has really hurt them. But I was at Carrow Road again last week, and Billy Gilmour came on, and certainly the fans around me, and I was lucky enough to be a guest of Brian Gunn's up in the stand, and they
just
were
just
toss
that
fans.
In casually. Just, wow, that's the most impressive things I've ever heard.
A member of the Gunn Club beforehand. Yeah, there you go.
That name up off the studio floor straight.
but the supporters around us, and admittedly they were probably, you know, parents of plenty of the players around us. You know, they applauded him onto the pitch. They wanted him in the team. They were surprised he hadn't started that game, because he had made a bit of an impact in the matches he'd played immediately before that fixture. So this is an education for him. It's not going to be easy for these kids to go out on loan to all and sundry in the Premier League, where, let's be honest, most Premier League clubs lose more than they win. That's the reality of it, and it'll actually hopefully make him a more rounded individual, a better footballer for the experience of playing in a team that is struggling, and maybe he has to try and, I don't know, pull up some trees and show the character that, again, a bit like Broja, that show that he's a Chelsea player wearing the shirt of another club, a team that isn't quite as good as Chelsea's. But he should treat it as an education and just continue giving his all, which he looked as if he was when he came on in that match, to be fair. And he didn't look too downcast with his lot. He's got plenty of ability, and I suspect if he's not at Chelsea next season, there'll be another loan spell, and maybe at a club that might stay up. You know, if Palace don't get Conor Gallagher, it's not outlandish to suspect they get blooming Billy Gilmour instead. So, I mean, it's still plenty going right for him in his career, and he's just got to use this as an experience as an education.
I think he's just been a victim of his own ridiculous success. And Norwich fans expected this kind of world-class guy that was going to single-handedly keep them up in the Premier League, which is ridiculous. But I still think it's actually been a really positive experience that he himself has learned that it's not all, you know, it's not all fine and dandy. You are going to have times. You've got to learn from this stuff. And don't forget as well, you've got to throw in his experience for this season of playing for Scotland in helping them potentially qualify for a World Cup. He's played in every game in their World Cup qualifiers. Of course, got a massive playoff, the playoffs coming next month. So I think overall, I think it's been a different sort of education for him this season. But it's been the first time he's had to play regularly in the Premier League as well, don't forget. He's only had the odd sort of cameos with Chelsea every now and then. I think Chelsea will actually be quite happy in a weird kind of way that they've watched him having to cope with adversity for the first time. And I think overall he has handled himself pretty well. There's been no sort of signs of dissent. He's not been sort of moaning at the fans and how they've treated him or perhaps treated him. I think he'll come back to Chelsea a better player. Again, though, a big decision in the summer. He's only got a year left in his contract. I'm sure Chelsea will extend it. Or if they do sell him, which sounds bonkers, if they do sell him, yeah, it would be back to, you know, the old buyback clause once again for a reasonable amount of money.
I'd reiterate that what Si says about this being his sort of first prolonged stint of Premier League football. Si says he's how phenomenally a victim of his own success. He hasn't had that much success. Let's not get carried away. He had those brilliant performances just before first lockdown under Lampard. I think they were Liverpool in the League Cup and Everton in the league, and he just looked outstanding. But he's never had a period in the team where he's played 10 games in a row in the Premier League where he's been absolutely integral and fantastic. He's never done that in his career. He's only 20. That's still to come. And we've only seen flashes of his real ability. Maybe they set the bar. Maybe expectations were raised too much by the, you know, the excellence of those performances against the two teams from Merseyside. But a player's real quality is measured in consistency over a period of time, and he just hasn't had that yet. Hopefully, that opportunity arises at some point in the future.
Meanwhile, in the EFL, Levi Colwill earning rave reviews at Huddersfield. He's currently injured, though. Tino Andron yet to debut for them, having joined on loan last month. Couple of loanee goalies who have been doing pretty well. Jamie Cummings swapped to relegation scrap with Gillingham for a promotion push with MK Dons in January. He's kept four clean sheets in his first seven games for them. And Nathan Baxter was having a decent season in the Championship with Hull, but a change of manager there has seen him lose his place. I wanted to talk too about Ian Martson, who overcame the career killer that is a visit from Fifield back in the Coventry team, and he got the winner at Reading last weekend. I wonder, Simon, have either Martson or Emerson got a chance of being back in the Chelsea squad as cover next season? Obviously, Chelsea made a big push to get Emerson back, didn't they, in January?
With Chelsea, anything's possible. I say that with a resigned... look, Emerson, the question mark is, will Leon trigger the clause that's in the loan deal to make it permanent? They have had an injection of cash from Newcastle, which may sort of help in that regard. But certainly, when I was sort of doing that piece in January about why Emerson was probably not going to return, I was being told, yeah, they're likely to keep him to the end of the season, but there's a question mark about whether they actually buy him permanently. So yes, if he comes back in the same situation. And then it's Alonso, Emerson, Chilwell, and that automatically leads you on to Ian Martson. And sort of like, well, where's there room for him to play? Even if Emerson goes, where's there room for him to play? So I really can't see it. I can't see a pathway for Ian Martson, basically. And they're also looking at Stuttgart's left back. So again, that sends out a...
What's the name, Si?
I've got Abu Dhabi fog.
Don't get fog in Abu Dhabi, Si. So come on.
It's sort of sauna, isn't it? Sauna?
Oh, no.
Borna Sosa, Croatian.
Borna Sosa, that's it. Yeah. Thanks, Dom. The quiz hasn't started yet.
I thought he did very well in his 18 under 21 caps for Croatia, the last of which was on the 12th of November 2020. I mean,
don't trust Wiki.
Come prepared or don't, yeah.
I don't. I think we've proved that over the last few years on this show. I can't see. I think Ian Martson is going to be another loan. Also, don't forget that he's shown what he can do in the Championship. I think if you're going to have a chance of making it at Chelsea, your next step is to then go on a loan in the Premier League and sort of go down the route that Mason Mount has gone on, although he didn't go on loan in the Premier League, I hasten to add. But, you know, sort of making those, that Conor Gallagher, of course, that we talked about. So I would imagine he'll go on a loan again.
Surely the likes of Emerson are actually the type of player that Chelsea should be trying to shift. Like, they shouldn't be welcoming them back. I mean, if Leon did come up with any kind of deal, you'd surely bite their hand off, given that Ben Chilwell will be back soon and you've got Marcus Alonso on the books already and you're obviously buying players from Germany whose names we can't remember. Maybe we'll come on to Michy Batshuayi as well, but that's the type of player that doesn't have a long-term future at Chelsea. They've hit a ceiling, and if the ceiling is, in Emerson's case, you can be the third choice wing-back who comes in when the other two, well, one of them's long-term injured and the other one needs a rest, then surely that isn't particularly productive for his future, or indeed for, given the outlay that the club have spent on him for Chelsea either.
And perhaps the piece that delighted Chelsea fans the most was when I asked from Abu Dhabi was when I asked Marcus Alonso whether he fancied doing an Azpilicueta and staying for a decade, and he was like, yeah. I think there was an element of Chelsea almost wanting to keep Emerson over Alonso, but the one they could do a deal for was Emerson. So that's one to sort of see which one of those two go. But Marcus sort of seemed to imply pretty heavily that he's very happy where he is and actually wants to extend his stay rather than go anywhere else. Who can blame him? I mean, he's winning trophies. He's obviously on a nice salary and life at Chelsea is pretty nice. Thank you very much.
Worked out well for him. Not so much for the last player we're going to touch on, Dom. Mishi Batshuayi, don't know if you remember, he once scored the goal that won Chelsea the title. He's currently at Besiktas. He's got 9 goals. Would that be enough to make them turn it into a permanent deal? Because surely next year somebody's got to. You can't just keep going on loan every year at his age.
Well, logic suggests that you can't, but you'd imagine that on the salary that he commands and the outlay that Chelsea have put on him over the years, and not least with the, I think it was 30-odd million to sign him from Marseille in the first place, that they would still be asking for a hefty amount of money to take him off, well, for him to leave, even with 12 months on his contract. I imagine that they probably look for 20 million still. And I'm not sure that Besiktas would have that kind of money. This is almost typical of of this game that Chelsea play, where, you know, if there's interest out there every year to for a club to take him on loan, then they'll just continue giving him another 12-month contract and, you know, park him off in Turkey with a nice hefty loan fee and his wages covered by the club he's gone to, and they'll just park the issue down the line for another year. That is his existence. That's been his existence for years. It's weird when you look at his career. I mean, I remember him fondly from his first stint on loan at Palace, but he didn't score that many. I think he's got 5 in about 12, 13 games in that stint. The only times he's actually been prolific in his career were, I think, one season at Marseille under Marcelo Bielsa and a very productive spell in Germany with Borussia Dortmund on loan for about 6 months. And it's almost like he's obviously done well for Belgium and he's as a sort of the backup striker to Lukaku and competing with a Benteke or something like that as a number two, but it's almost like his reputation is still hinges on the goals he scored in Ligue 1 quite a long time ago now. So, you know, he's done all right at Besiktas. I was talking to someone about him yesterday. He's done okay, but that's the Turkish league. I mean, Alexander Sirloth scored 20-odd goals in the Turkish league. Let's not get carried away.
Just a quick one on Mishi by own Tuppenceworth. In a way, his example sums up sort of what happens both on the Chelsea front and the player front. On the player front, he was on good money. Why push himself? Lost his hunger in the grand scheme of things. And he's just happy to go on this conveyor belt of loans and stuff. He's not really pushing, not really sort of making big song and dance about leaving. But The Dortmund loan is a classic example of Chelsea's expectations and sort of coming back to bite them. In that, one source told me at the time, I think that because Dortmund were very keen to buy him permanently, and a source told me that they're asking for 50 million. Dortmund just laughed.
They don't pay that for anyone, do they?
Well, Palace was quoted about £40 million to take him at the start of last season, and that was crazy. When he had 12 months to go on his contract initially.
Exactly. So it sums up, like, we all get Chelsea a business, and of course, aim high, you know, don't ask, don't get, all that. But there's also a, come on, you know, get with it, get with the program. Like, there's no one's going to spend that amount of money on a player that is clearly you don't want. And also, you send out that message by loaning these guys out every year that actually don't have to buy them. We can just wait long enough and they'll loan them out for us and probably pay some of their wages and we'll get a really lovely deal out of it and get a senior pro for hardly any money at all. So Chelsea, the way they run things sometimes, that they don't help themselves.
He's 28, Mishi Batshuayi.
Amazing. I think that one more thing.
Just be on loan at that age.
I think we should always highlight the fact he costs more than N'Golo Kanté.
Well, at least that Dortmund move, I guess, kind of facilitated Giroud coming in, didn't it? And he proved to be a useful player for Chelsea for a couple of years. Right, we'll check in on the loan army again at some point this season, I'm sure. But next today, it is the return of the quiz.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
It's been a tough one for me, this. Regular listeners will know we like to theme the quiz on the upcoming fixture, which would appear to give Dom an advantage, but we shall see. Three questions then on Chelsea and Crystal Palace. Simon, you're up first. Who made what is so far his only appearance for Chelsea this season when the teams met on opening day at the Bridge?
We've just been talking about him. Emerson.
Emerson is correct. As soon as I read that question out, I thought we've literally just been talking about it. Okay. Dom, you're up. Cesar Azpilicueta, as we know, has won it all. He's also been sent off at Crystal Palace. It happened in October 2014. 3 minutes after Dave got his marching orders, Palace also had a man sent off. Name him.
Damien Delaney.
This is going to be far too easy. I'm really losing my head here. Simon, second question. Hopefully this is a difficult one. Chelsea's biggest win against Palace was a 6-2 thumping in the Premier League at Stamford Bridge in 1998. In the Blues lineup that day was a defender who would go on to play for Palace, making more appearances for them than for anyone else he played for. Who was he? That's the kind of noise I like to hear after finishing a quiz question.
98.
Cool. 1-1 after a question each, so this feels big.
Well, particularly against the Palace fan.
Yeah, and Dom's next question is the one that producer Lucy said is far too easy.
He'll know this.
Under pressure.
I was working for Palace at that 6-2. I was in the press box.
What chance have I got?
And it was such a nightmare. And after the game, Steve Coppell was holding various meetings with various members of the Palace board, and given they were in the throes of a takeover at the time, I don't know which chairman he was talking to, but he was so late to his press conference that I missed my last train home and ended up having to get a taxi all the way back to Norwood at massive expense.
Oh, they say nurses have it tough. There you go, Simon. Dom's just bought you a load of time.
I mean, I'm struggling to even look. It's not right. You say defender.
Yeah.
It's not right, but I'm just trying to think of an old player that went and played a bit more for Palace. I'm just going to say David Hopkin, even though I know it's not right.
Wasn't a defender, so no, not right. Dom?
It was Danny Granville, scorer
of
a glorious free kick against Millwall once.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice fella, Danny.
Right,
here's your easy one then, Dom. Kurt Zouma, as we know, is an idiot. Despite that, he scored for Chelsea at Selhurst Park last season. Yeah. The question is, though, what breed of cat is the pet that was taken away from him by the RSPCA last week?
You know what? If that's the easy one, then I have deliberately stayed. I was so horrified by that story. I can't bring myself to watch the video, and I can't even bring myself to even read about the story. So I'm going to hand this over to Si as a complete open goal. Over to you, mate. I have no idea.
Likewise, I remember reading the story, but it was some weird, you know, special cat, isn't it? It's an expensive one, not like
a
the
special
kind of
cat.
Well, you know what I mean, like a nice breed, not the sort of tom cat that I'd probably get if my wife allowed me to have a pet.
Right. Well, I mean, you've not got the question right, but I think you've got the title of the podcast nailed there with special cat. If nothing else. the answer was a Bengal cat. Okay, so it's 2-1 to Dom because you pinched the Danny Granville point, didn't you? So, Simon, you need to get this right to maintain a chance, really. What percentage of Christian Pulisic's Chelsea goals have been scored against Palace? A percentage, please.
Percentage?
Yeah.
Cool, that's a really
good question. So you've got to figure out how many goals he scored against Palace, then how many goals he scored total.
It's a difficult question. I'm not denying that, but, you know, the standard has
difficult,
been raised so
difficult,
high in the last
I don't
couple
think
of weeks.
Actually does justice to this question.
Are you talking Premier League goals or all goals?
All of Christian Pulisic's Chelsea goals.
Okay.
So of the total, what percentage was scored?
So he's been
Palace?
At the club. So he joined in.
Joined 1920.
1920. So it's 2.5 seasons, of which he spent about 2 years injured. So. Uh-oh, I've probably upset the American listeners now. I think he scored quite a lot against Palace. He's got a good record. I'm going to go 30%.
Done.
I'm just trying to work out how many goals he scored.
Right.
I reckon he scored four. he's probably scored five against Palace, and I reckon he's probably got 20 altogether. So 25%.
That is absolutely spot on. Five of his 20 goals have been scored against Crystal Palace. That is magnificent. I think that means that you've won, Dom, but I'm going to ask you your last question anyway. Maybe Simon
gutted.
Can steal it to get a bit of respectability.
I'm going. See you, bye.
Right, here's the final question of this week's quiz. In his Premier League career, Christian Benteke has scored 7 goals in 13 games against Chelsea. It's the joint most goals he scored against an opponent in the Premier League. So who else has Benteke scored 7 Premier League goals against?
Well, the majority must have been for Villa, because he's hardly scored any goals for Palace. I remember him scoring a hat-trick against QPR, so let's say QPR.
QPR is incorrect. Simon, can you steal it?
Man United?
No, all right. I want somebody to get this, so I will tell you. It is a team who are currently in League One.
Sunderland?
Sunderland. Is correct. Yeah. Well, Dom, you've won this week's quiz. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'd like to say thanks.
Well,
to...
the Palace quiz, yeah.
Hey, one of the questions was about a cat.
But the others, some of them were about the Eagles, so there's your link. Right, elsewhere in Chelsea news, no action for the women's team this weekend. They're on an international break. There is, however, a massive matchup for the under-23s on Friday night. Andy Meyer's boys currently in the relegation zone in PL2 ahead of their game against Spurs at Kings Meadow. Lost 3 of their last 4, only 7 more games to play. So they really need to start picking up points. Otherwise, they will drop into Division 2 next season. You can watch that one live on Chelsea's online platforms. It's a 7 o'clock kickoff. The under-18s also have a league game. They're away to Reading on Saturday morning, currently 3rd in the under-18 Premier League South. Could be top by the end of the day if they win and other results go their way. Worth pointing out, by the way, the Youth Cup quarterfinal will take place at Stamford Bridge on Thursday of next week. It's against Blackpool. That's also 7 o'clock kickoff. Simon, thank you. You've written the piece that I've been waiting for somebody at The Athletic to write for absolutely ages, the football icon story. I remember watching the series. Tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, I've interviewed Carl Magne, who won the second series. And it's a classic sliding doors moment in so many ways, because he went on a trial, the Newcastle leg of the trial that the TV show ran, and he was going to go home because he turned up and he just saw this long queue and just went, oh, stuff this. And he was walking with his dad back to his car, and his mate sort of lets out a whistle, and his mate was at the front of the queue and says, come jump in with me. And
disgraceful, that, by the way. That's not how queues work.
You can imagine all those people behind who sort of went on to realise, yeah, that guy went on to win. But, yeah, fascinating sort of insight. One, into the TV programme. I mean, imagine sort of being in a sort of X Factor, Big Brother-style show in itself as a footballer, but secondly, with this big prize at the end of it. Of winning a contract at Chelsea. And this was Chelsea in the early years of Abramovich and Mourinho. Remarkable. And Carl is, he talks great about what it was like in the house, what he sort of experienced on a sort of day-to-day basis at Chelsea, sort of getting absolutely shouted at. The reaction of the current players, the youth and reserve players that these guys had to go and play with. And you can imagine the sort of reception that these sort of TV contestants were getting from the likes of, we're talking, you know, some guys who went on to have a great pro career, and sort of Jack Cork, Scott Sinclair, there's a few others, and he went on to play in a very fine youth team. He actually sent me a picture, and it's posted on the piece with, and he's there with sort of Gael Kakuta and all kinds of names. Gael Kakuta obviously made a name for many other reasons, but real talented guys. And then what's really nice as well about the story is that he now works for the club. So even though his pro career didn't go as well as he'd hoped because he picked up injuries, he now works for the club, and so does the winner of the first series, Sam Harrell. And I just think that it's just a great story all round that this show basically changed these guys' lives, because it wasn't working out for them until they entered. So I had great fun doing it as well.
Yeah, I really like reading it. You should definitely check it out, listener. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you aren't a subscriber. What are you working on at the moment, Dom?
I'm just writing up an interview with Joe Cole, talking about his reminiscing of his year at Lille on loan from Liverpool, ahead of Chelsea's game against Lille next week in the Champions League. I was lucky enough to go and visit him in France a little over 10 years ago, just as he was settling in there, and we sort of revisited that occasion this week. And Joe's just a lovely, lovely fella, and always interesting to listen to. So I'm hoping that interview sings.
Yeah, we're looking forward to reading that as well. Liam's got a piece up on Chelsea's peripheral trophy winners, your Rob Greens, your 2012 Lukakus, that kind of thing. And in deference to what Cesar Azpilicueta did in the Club World Cup final, Nick Miller's written about the rise of the decoy penalty taker. So check that out too. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go if you would like to subscribe. If you're not already a subscriber, you can read all of our articles on Chelsea as well as everything else on the site. Use that link, athletic.com/ChelseaPod. Right now, you can sign up for a special price of just £1 a month for 6 months. It's theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to go to sign up. We'll be back on Monday to reflect on Palace and look ahead to the return of the Champions League. Until then, many thanks to Dom, Simon, Lucy, and to you, listener. We'll catch up with you Monday. Have a world-class weekend. Bye for now.
The Athletic.